All right. Hey, everybody. Tom Miller here with my teammate, Lauren Waters. And welcome to our third session of our 10 Indicators of High Performing Charter Schools book study. And we've been really excited. Yesterday, Lauren, we got our first 5-star review on Amazon. So that's awesome. So
Woohoo!
we would
That's
love
awesome.
that if you bought the book on Amazon, you can just go right to your order and you should be able to give a review there. Or if you bought it through us, you still should be able to go through and leave a review. So please leave an honest one. If it's like a 1 out of 5, just don't bother. We'll just give you your money back. But I would certainly like to know. So yeah, that's always exciting that the book is making an impact on people. And thanks everybody for being flexible last week. I'm sorry about the miscommunication. But I was traveling to Georgia and Lauren took a well-deserved vacation, so we just switched the time out. So if you haven't had a chance to go back and listen to last week's call on Indicator 2 and 3, we'll talk more about that today. But both of those calls are recorded. They're on your reading schedule, or you can check them out on the YouTube page or the Principal's Office podcast, High Performing Principal's podcast. You can get the recordings right there every single week. So I love it. Well, Lauren, I wanted just to, we have some people that are here for the first time. And so I was really, really thinking about that these indicators are universal, no matter if you're a charter school, a public school, as in a district school, or a private school. They're completely universal. You have all 10 of these indicators in every school, in every school setting. And so, they came about. First of all, I started doing research, effective schools research, because back when I was a middle school principal, I was not very good, but I was very curious about what made effective schools. And that's how this started. And Ron Edmonds wrote some, he wrote The 7 Correlates of Effective Schools, him and Larry Lessott back in the 70s. And so you can just go back, everybody, and still see those, and you'll see, identifiers that are very similar to our 10. I just kind of broke them out in a couple of different areas. Did I create this? Not 100%, but like these are performance indicators that have been around for decades and decades. So I think it's important that you understand that when you have a better view of these indicators and you consistently work to improve each one of them, you're going to just see significant growth in your organization when you focus on them. And what I want to spend maybe 3 to 5 minutes first in our call is what could be the cause of some of these gaps that you have in place. Okay, because these indicators are predictable. You see them in every school. When Lauren and I do site visits, or someone on our team does a site visit, like you can see these pieces right away, especially when we're going to talk about it tonight, Lauren, right? Culture and highly engaged employees and sustained employees. We have great partners with Peter Sinek from Equitable AXA, and I got another colleague, Andrew Witt, and they sell a benefit insurance, and they tell me within 5 minutes of walking in a building, whether or not they know they're going to have a good day of sales or not, because the culture of the organization hits you as soon as you walk in, and you can feel it, and you can see it in the actions of the people, and then you can see it in other indicators, and one being whether or not people are actually buying into your benefits, which we were just having just kind of like a side conversation, and it turned into this a bigger piece. So it is predictable. And so as we talk about these things, I want to always make sure that we're not allowing the dreaded "I know" come into your conversation. Just always ask, how well do we do that, right? How well do we do that? Because behind every effect, there is a cause. And so what I want to make sure that over these next 3 sessions, and this Saturday morning, I'm going to host the first group session at 9. It'll just be live, to anybody to ask questions or to help them with their wheel. But I want you to start to really think about what's the cause to this effect, right? And when Lauren and I work with principals, and this is describing myself when I wrote this out. When you don't have the results that you desire, you tend to like work harder. And then you get frustrated because you're not getting better results. But the problem is that if you're working hard on the wrong things, on the wrong causes, that's what causes the frustration. So we want to make sure that when you go through these exercises and you're really thinking through, and when you're writing your notes on the right side of the page, you're really asking yourself that question, like, what's the cause of this actual gap? And we'll share more. What we see as an effect after the effect is this scope creep, right? Where like an organization going back to indicator two and three, they'll change their academic programming. They'll completely like buy a whole new program, like for math, and say that the last one didn't work. But they really didn't identify the cause of it not working. They just blame the program. And Lauren's heard me say this a million times. Every plan works. Everyone. Every single plan will work for you. Every exercise, plan, every dietary plan, every financial plan, it'll all work if you work it. And so it's really important to be careful of, scope creep. And that's when you're changing programs, or you're changing policies, or you're changing rules kind of on the fly without really doing deeper investigation, because that causes time and credibility and funds and all these other pieces, right? So the only way that you can really change your effects, right, your overall result, is to change that cause, okay? Is to change that cause. Lauren, anything you want to share on that? Just, that whole cause and effect piece.
Yeah, I was just going to add, talking an overview of these indicators, just how useful the assessment tool has become when we've been serving our clients. I think that oftentimes they will come to us and they think they know what the cause and effect is, but having that 10 indicator and having a whole picture of what your current reality is has helped us guide them through what truly is the cause and the effect. Maybe they're feeling like their school culture is bad, but really we find it's that no one understands their education plan, or there's not a professional development plan in place for teachers to grow. So that has just been, one really great tool for us to use. And there's so many good strategies. I know you're going to talk about them in indicator 4 and 5 about how to really see change through implementing the strategies in the book.
I mean, so one way to start to change your view is to go see higher performing schools. We talked a little bit about that last week. The build and borrow, or the borrow and build, whatever order you want to put in, doesn't matter, right? But some organization or some leaders, when they get stuck, that's all that they've ever known. So they kind of stay stuck because they haven't seen anything better. So we're always really excited when we can get school leaders outside of the building. We'll be at Quest Academy on April 22nd in Raleigh. But th it doesn't matter where you are in the country or the world, you can go see a higher performing school. Just call them up, right? And just say, hey, and they don't even have to be like super high performing. It's just they may have something that they're, better than you at. And you get to go over and watch, right, and ask questions. But if you start to do what other successful people do on a consistent basis, I guarantee you are going to soar, because you're just going to see better results. Now, I think next week, Laura, we'll talk a little bit about this, but I have been hearing a lot from principals. I had one tell me, well, I don't really know how successful I am. So one thing that's really important is that we start to really take the time to unpack and visualize what success looks like and feels like. Because if you're having trouble with that part, that's where those getting around other mentors is better and really important, and the seeing other schools, so you can get better yourself. So I'm going to share my screen here for a sec, and feel free, anybody, if this is your first time with us, drop your name in the chat and where you're joining us from. And any questions that you have, and then we're going to open it up here in a second to kind of share any aha moments. But this is the full wheel. Obviously, you have it in your book, and some of you maybe downloaded the short two-pager where you can write on it. That's where I've been coloring in my wheel. So I don't know if you guys are, if I've got my own. It's tucked inside my book. So. And then this is what a wheel might look like after you've assessed all the 10 indicators, right? So this particular school, and I can't remember, Lauren, if this is like I think this is the average of all our schools, maybe. We've had close to 500 now. I think we may have passed the 500 mark. But this particular organization, 3, 4, indicator 3, 4, 7, and 10, right? But what I was really wanted to talk about tonight, just to kick off, is what words would you use to describe these gaps in your score? So if you're a 3 out of 5 or a 4 out of 5 or a 7 out of 9, what words might you use to describe those gaps? Go ahead and put it in the chat box or feel free to unmute yourself. What words would you use? Lauren, what would you first think about?
The first word that popped in my head is like a shortfall.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Yeah, and this is why it's so important that, whether your weekly meeting is Wednesday or Thursday, is having some conversation to discuss that, shortfall, right? That's the gap. We talked about minding these gaps last week and making sure you're taking the time to really understand why these gaps exist. I wrote down some words, and awareness, right, was one. We kind of talked about it. Doubt, right? Could be like a doubt or condition and circumstance about, well, we'll never get to that point. And one of the examples that we're going to spend some time on is the supervision ratio of principals. I met an incredible woman, and she bought the book. I don't know if she's on now, but she was at the Georgia Charter School. She supervised 90 people, 90 people as a principal. And wow, just, the conditions and circumstances over time have grown that supervision gap. It's just significant.
We've got a couple in the chat if you want me to share.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah. Opportunities to grow. What are we missing? Where can we improve?
Good. Yeah, I love the grow part, because in the book I talk about John's five phases of growth, and I looked at it, I go, oh, this is exactly what you could use, right? One is, I don't know what I don't know. The second is, all right, I know that I need to know something. Like the third was, okay, now I know what I need to know, right? So all those things will help. Now I love that. I also wrote down prioritization, belief, and this word compromise. Compromise. And maybe that's more of an answer to the next question, is what are the causes of these gaps, right? Known or unknown. And one is compromise. And I remember when I was at the Maxwell conference 2 weeks ago, someone said, I mean, really, why are we working towards compromise? Like, would we walk on a compromise bridge? Would we get on a compromise plane? Like, no, we want commitment. And so I ask you all, what are some causes to these gaps, right? So we use some words to describe them. Another one might have been resources for the last slide as well, right? Known or unknown resources. What are some causes? And this is where I think belief, doubt, compromise, maybe even just, skill set. I haven't been trained how to do this yet. It might be. I love it. Is there any, how many new ones in the chat? What are we missing here? We're gonna
No,
improve it. Good. Huh? Yeah.
something that came to my mind was communication. Sometimes the leaders don't communicate out, and so therefore the staff members just don't know.
Oh, you're so right there, actually. Because I didn't write this down, but I thought about that quote, "The mist in your mind eventually becomes the fog in your organization." So sometimes it's clarity too. I don't know what to communicate. If you follow me on any of my social media pages, I've been trying to take that morning leadership thought and just do a short, 3 minute. But the one was on problems, and it was that the problem is leaders try to solve all the problems instead of the most important problems. And so, this is one here, right? You'd be like, oh, I'll go solve the paper jam on the, on the copier, or I'll go substitute in that class, or I'll, like, instead of truly solving the problem and taking the time to do it, because, problems are big and scary, and if we've survived to this point, why do we really need to improve it, right? Why do we really need to improve? So that's good. Okay, so keep that in mind as we're talking through, and as we build that PowerPoint out, we'll share it, and then you guys can use it however you want, right? Or you can just put arrows on your own wheel and just start asking your team, where do these wheels come from? So we'd love, anybody have a celebration, an aha moment, anything that they want to bring to the group before we start on indicator four? Well, say, I know last week, when I did my wheel, Lauren, our indicator three on our Seaside School is, it's just a one. And I really, when I was reading through it, I was like, okay, like, are we really a one? What's the story? And I think it's not having that committed to laid out, committed to, written plan, I think is what we are really missing for indicator three. And that's with the supervision and how many times you people get feedback and having all these pieces. But when I thought about it, when I was in Georgia, somebody asked me, what happens when you're disagreeing on what a goal should be? And I said, oh, well, I think you could just take the actual sub indicators and that's your goal. That's your objective. You just all need to come to an agreement what success would look like with that piece.
Right.
And so because he was getting really worried about having to, create all these pieces, that don't have to create it. It's already there. Like, don't fight it, just start. And don't worry about writing it as a SMART goal or whatever else. I know some, districts and organizations, force you to do that. Most people don't get the timeline correct on any goal. But that's where you could start. You could use that specific language to do that. And then, you can use the skinny strategic plan template that Lauren and I are going to start to share with you tonight to start to just build those plans out. So, Lauren, you want to get us going with indicator four? I'm losing my voice here. I'm going to take a second to clean up. Sorry, everybody. I'm not
Yeah.
well.
Well, I'd love to hear if there's any moments from Indicator 4 that stuck out to anyone. But man, when I was reading through this, I just started highlighting all over the place. And at the very beginning, it talks about the Peter Principle, and I just think that that is so true. People are typically hired for their work ethic, or they're promoted for their work ethic. And it's just so important as a leader to be aware that you are equipping yourself and those around you, that as everyone kind of keeps moving up in the organization, that you're in this constant state of ensuring there's clarity around roles and that you are equipping your team members, or else it just creates frustration.
Yeah. And this might seem crazy, Lauren, but when I was reflecting, I wrote myself a note. I didn't know I was supposed to do all that. I had
Yeah.
no idea. And still some days I forget that, oh, I have to teach them that, or I have to go find a trainer for them or a coach for them. It just wasn't ever ingrained in me. And I would assume the only way for it to be ingrained in you is you would have had to experience it as a younger leader, right? Or been worked in an organization where growth was really important and talked about a lot, because that's really all that is. All these indicators, it's just growth. I mean, every single one, right? I mean, technical skills, yes, I totally got that. But somebody popped up a meme yesterday and it was like all the skills that are really required. And this is a section in the book, right? Communication, collaboration, and relationship should be part of your professional development plan. And I was like, yeah, it's like all these, we spend too much time training technical skills when we need to spend more time focusing on the, they call them soft skills, but they're so important. They're so important.
Yes, I think that's an indicator five when we talk about the training on communication, but in all of the survey climate data that I read, communication is always an area of improvement. It's always something that schools are striving to improve, yet we rarely train around it. So
Yeah, nor do we take any classes outside of maybe like a public speaking class in college, right? You may have been required to take one communication class, yet we communicate all day. And remember, non-communication is still communication, right? So on page 89, I marked that there's six reasons why you should continue to grow yourself and your team. Leadership abilities, the lid that demonstrates effectiveness. Your leadership ability for best or for a better or worse will determine your effectiveness and the potential impact of your organization. So if you've read John Maxwell's 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, that's the law of the lid right there. The higher you want to climb, the more leadership capacity you need to build. It's got a multiplying effect to change the direction of the organization. Like everybody needs, that's that cause. Everything needs to change inside. So it may be a change of the leader or a change of the leader in terms of their actual personality and their own perspective. It's just so important. And again, I it probably wasn't until I joined the Maxwell team in 2014 that I even start to understand that. I still wouldn't say I'm very good at it. Lauren will probably say that too. It's not
Well, one of my favorite quotes, Tom, is right underneath that, on page 89. I put a star next to it. If you think the cost of training is expensive, wait until you get the bill for incompetence.
good. Yeah, I know. It's a little rude, but it's really funny. I mean, it just is. I mean,
I think when you look at school budgets and you see the line item for professional development, sometimes it is so small.
that's we always find it's less than the water and sewer line. So I always draw that comparison, say, why are you? I mean, it's important that you get your trash off of campus, right? But it seems like you're investing more money in that than you are in the only thing that's going to grow your organization. I know we got a few leaders from Piedmont Community Charter here, and I know they truly invest on theirs, and we do too as an organization. We have our professional development line item is probably bigger than most organizations with 20 or 30 people. We spend a lot of time growing ourselves. Super, super important to make sure. And I just saw the school system I used to work at, New Hanover County. They're going through some significant budget crunches, and the top of the line was professional development funds. All their PD funds wiped out. Can't get better with that. No offense to New Hanover County schools. I know they're trying, but it's really disappointing to hear that that's the first thing that gets cut.
Hey Tom, Jeffrey had a reflection. Jeffrey, do you want to unmute yourself and share?
Yes, I just wanted to say, I had the pleasure of being able to be coached by Tom and Leaders Building Leaders before, and he had mentioned to me the importance of delegation and just being able to be reminded and under the fourth indicator that delegation is so important, and you want to make sure that you're creating that list of things to stop doing, which is important because I myself, I'm like, I want things done a certain way, and I want to do everything, but I can't do everything. So being able to identify individuals that can that you can delegate to, that where they can do 80% as well as you can, is something that's very important, and it was a great reminder for me.
Yeah, thanks, Jeffrey. Yeah, I appreciate that. And yeah, I mean, it really is. You got to be asking yourself every day, is this the best use of my time? Am I the person who should be doing this? Because you're actually, I didn't realize you're actually taking away from the other people by doing it. You're actually making them feel less valued by doing the work, right? That's what you hired them for. And then when you complain that it's not done the way you want it, you say, well, I hired them. I need to train them, right? Or I need to get them trained, or I need to put them in the right position is super important. Hey, Lauren, let's make a note to make sure we share out the key result area template, because I talk about it a little bit on pages like 92 to 95, not in
Sure.
direct words, but I'm wondering if this isn't one of our skinny strategic plans here. It's just a page, and it's the key result area. If some of you have actually done it with us, it's just a one pager that you can give your administrative team to fill out and ask questions like, what is my goal, right? Or what is my role to the goal? Like, what, like, how does my work even like help out here? And what are the things I'm responsible for? And is there anybody else responsible for them? Or who would know if I didn't do them, right? It just really starts to build awareness for the leader to make sure that the person they hired knows exactly what they're responsible for. Because we find that a lot, right, Lauren? When you do the climate surveys, like, you know, people are just not sure. They're not sure. And if you've done the DISC profile with us, you know that I think it's 80, 87% or something, 86% of the population are S styles or C styles, and they need to know why and how. And so you're constantly want to make sure that, you know, people are clear about what they're doing and what they're responsible for. And then if you don't do that, right, or if you, the common problem to that is on page 95. It's the supervision ratio that's just so significantly unbalanced. It makes it almost impossible for leaders to truly give effective feedback to those that they serve. And so this is where I see the most problems occurring, because we haven't taken the time to build up other leaders to give feedback to employees. And we talked about this at the Georgia Charter Conference last week about how, you know, can I get there? I'm like, well, you got to think big, but start small. You know, it's not just going to happen overnight. And you also just can't throw people underneath someone else's supervision without making sure that person knows what proper supervision looks like. And I think we sometimes see this where schools like put like, you know, mentors in charge of mentees. I'm like, no, that's not the right relationship. Or a coach supervising, like, no, coaches shouldn't be supervising either. Like, supervising is that I'm fully, you know, responsible to you, to make sure I answer your questions, to make sure you are a resource and you have what you need. You know, coaching is going to grow the person. Mentorship informs the person and helps, you know, and helps the person. But there's certain ways to get, you know, feedback and you know, just a few brainstorming ideas, or you've got other teachers that can give other teachers feedback. I mean, that's one way you could, you know, do it. You could build substitute days for your best teachers, teach them how to give feedback effectively, and you know, they could do it. Yes, they're not supervising, but at least someone's getting feedback in the classroom. So that was one way we had talked about last week. Lauren, what were some ways, because you worked with such a great organization, what were some ways that you guys addressed this challenge?
Well, definitely we put things in place just like you had mentioned, building in days into the calendar to where everybody was allowed to go observe other teachers. We actually stole some ideas from one of the consortium visits at East Wake Academy, where if they had some symbols on their doors, basically. And so if teachers wanted people to come in and see things that they were doing, you know, they would put a symbol on the door that let people know, like, hey, come in and see things that I'm doing. And it also gave our teachers a leadership opportunity. You know, they were always looking to, you know, how do I move to the next level on those NESA standards, on those teacher evaluations? And one of those ways is to lead your colleagues. And so by opening your classroom doors and letting them in and teaching them things, it's just another way to give them that leadership opportunity. So we really tried to build that in and use them to teach others in our organization.
Yeah, so important. So this is, oops. Can you guys see the screen now, Lauren? Can you see the screen? Okay. So this is what Lauren and I and our team is working on. This is going to be the next step for everybody, is participating in our Skinny Strategic Plan Made Simple program. But this is just an outline of, these are questions that we would put to a team or a board committee, and we'll share the blank template too. But you know, you guys being as part of this study, we had promised we would give you the first five for free as a gift. So here's one of the first five. But so this is the outcome that I desire. Remember, it's so important for you to write it out. So I just put raising employee engagement and development through a healthier organizational structure. You're going to have to sit there and write with your team what success would look like, right? So maybe it's 12-1, maybe it's 15-1, maybe it's just making sure that every teacher gets a touch, every employee gets a touch point. Whatever you decide success looks like, that's fine. I guarantee that when you write that out and start to work at it, you're going to realize that you chose a bottom line goal and you're going to soar past it, right? But the most important part is just starting to see it and write it down. Who can oversee this? So maybe it's your school improvement team, maybe it's your admin team, whoever you want. How often will you meet? And what's our current reality? This is maybe the most important question. This kind of goes back to that gap that Lauren and I were talking about. This is where you just unpack it all. You just start writing. Well, the current reality is I got 90 employees and I'm the only supervisor, and I've got all this responsibility at XYZ. I don't have any other staff on admin. I mean, whatever it is, and just keep asking yourself the question, is there anything else? Because don't just I just heard Matthew McConaughey say this. Don't half-ass this. He's like, just go for it. Like, really write out everything here. Write out your conditions and circumstances. Write out your beliefs. Write out your budget problems. Just write it out. Just get it all out there, because this is going to be important, because you're going to have to build a plan that overcomes this reality. Okay. The
Yeah.
most
And
important. Yeah. Go ahead, Laura.
Tom, I was just going to add, today in one
Yeah.
of our inner circle calls, we were actually talking about feedback, and it's that time for observation, finishing up round three of those observations, and you're talking about what the current reality is and maybe what are some of the hurdles. The topic we were talking about today is sometimes the tool is the obstacle. The tool that you're using is cumbersome or not user friendly. People aren't educated on the system, and it can become a barrier for people. So,
And it can become an attachment. It really can become an attachment. Oh, well, we spent all this money on it, or we put all this time and effort into it. So, okay, like, are we using it correctly? Yes or no?
right.
Has everybody been trained on it? Yes or no? Like, when are we going to come to the point where we're either going to kill it, right, or embrace it? I mean, one of those two things has to happen.
Yep.
Yeah, it kind of goes to that curriculum conversation. It's the same thing, right? You got, if you
Absolutely.
got all these people against a program, it's just a nightmare, right? They're just you're just constantly in a fight. So on the next page, so then we just listed out some action steps that we think you could take, okay? And these are actually, they come directly from the book on page 96. And I use North Carolina numbers, because that's what I knew and that's what I was able to find. But you might be able to find some supervision ratios in your own state, but it doesn't matter. I mean, everywhere I've gone, nobody's argued with me that 12 to 1. In fact, in the military, I think they told me like 12 is crazy. Like, it might be even like lower than that, because they just realize like how critically important it is to be able to lead people well and to give them constant feedback. But you're just gonna take a look at like what's your current ratio. This is what I did at the school I just took over, the Seaside School. I looked at a ratio and I started to just rebuild the org chart that made sense, and get closer to that 12 to 1 ratio. As the organizational leader, you should be spending your time with the top 20% in terms of leadership capacity, right? But it also could be positional leadership too. You want to make sure that you're spending time with, future leaders. Create the org chart that lines up, communicate the org chart, and then you want to make sure everybody's clear with their roles, their responsibilities, that they're trained and equipped to do those pieces. And that's why, some of our programs are built around this. We've got the high performing coaching program. We teach others how to coach. It's not a coaching certification program, but it uses the GROW model, so you can have a really effective way to equip others. We've got our delegation program, and we've got our empowerment program. We've got our 6 steps of feedback. Like, we're building these pieces that can help you and your team. You could just take them. And so there might be some other action steps. There is no right, there is no wrong. There is just do, right? Or what did Yoda say? Do or do not, right? Or there's no try. So you got to do something to make it better. And then the last four questions are, what are the tangible deliverables that you're making progress, right? It could be I created the org chart. It could be that I had a meeting. Like, all those things are important. How often will anybody see the data, right? So how would I know it's working? Maybe it's your climate surveys improve if you did one every couple of months, or not every couple of months, every quarter or something, just like a short one. Like, hey, this is what we're trying. Tell me that it's working. But I think this question here, Lauren, the second to last one is kind of what we started unpacking with that gap. What would need to be true tomorrow that's not true today for us, to meet it? And this is where you're really attacking attachments. You're attacking your beliefs, any doubt that you have that you can't do it. This is where this needs to be unpacked for sure. Because there's schools in every community and they have the same kids, same pool of teachers, same funding formula, yet some of them are extremely, extremely powerful when it comes to, developing other people. And if you're not, you gotta root that out and say, how come we're not able to create this same model that this other school that's right down the street? So that's the skinny strategic plan process. That's a 45-minute to an hour, maybe sit down. You could break into small groups or whatever it may be, or maybe you just do it by yourself. I would highly encourage that you bring someone else with you. I think, Lauren, you've been using this a little bit in our inner circle calls too, right? So we could just bring that out and say, okay, like if you ever have a conversation with me, like Jeffrey did, he probably just had deja vu because that's just the questions I say. I say, what are you trying to achieve? What's your current reality? What have you tried so far, right? Do you got any self-limiting beliefs on these things? This just unpacks it. Okay, well, what are you willing to try, right? What's just the next step? And that's all you're really trying to do here is that next step. I love it. Lauren, is there anything more an indicator for? I know this is a big chapter. It's a big indicator. It's got a lot of really great pieces in it. I do think that maybe one that just came out this week, we talked a little bit about, there's a couple ways of how to give feedback. I use the Loom, the short, video. You could create a Google form to make it quick. You can leave a post-it. It's like, just do something. You gotta do something. And I realize this is where I'm falling short at my school. I'm just walking through classrooms and I'm not really leaving anything behind. And I've got to do a better job at that for sure. Was there something you want to share? Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. I was just going to share. I'm not sure if it's on your YouTube channel, but I know you've recently done a whole webinar on this feedback framework, the VRUOL. And so just another great resource if you wanted to hear more about how to implement that framework. I know you've done some webinars around that.
Yeah, if you've been a part of my leading and communicating to a difficult people, that's the but it works for everybody. So it's vision, reality, understanding. That's where you're just asking a question, right? So here's what I hope that happened. Here's what did happen. Help me understand how come that happened. And O is opportunity or some options. And L is leadership. How can I have led you better? How could I have communicated this better? So we would be in a better spot right now. Lauren, you wanted to talk about the hiring process, right? That starts like on page 111 or so, right? You want to unpack a little bit of
Yeah,
that?
sure. Well, the first, before we get to page 111, on page 109, there are these questions. You call it an assessment, an inventory assessment. When you are looking to hire within or maybe promote somebody, or there's a need and you're considering looking outside the organization. I just love these reflection questions here. It says assessment of needs, assets on hand, ability of candidates, attitude of candidates, and accomplishments of the candidates. And I really thought those questions there were thoughtful, and because sometimes I mean, as we've talked throughout this whole thing, you promote people because of their work ethic, but it's not necessarily because
Yes.
of the need.
Yeah, it's always the way, right? Yeah. Just
Yes.
hire the person that gets the most stuff done. Yeah,
Right.
we're not good at that. We don't take a very good inventory. Yeah, so that's on page, it's a 109 in my book, but it might be different for
Yes,
you.
it's one on 109.
Okay, yeah. And that's just always a good way. Anytime you start off with, or there's maybe someone in your substitute pool, or there's someone in your parent base and your volunteer base that might be able to actually do some of these pieces. And so I like asking questions of parents and subs, when they first come on. And just holding it in some sort of Google Sheet. Where do you work? What are some of your skills and talents, right? Because sometimes you don't need someone full time at a charter school. You need someone who
Right.
could put in just a couple hours a week. Yep.
I'd love to open it up to the group though, because it is, intent to return forms. I know we're going out. Interviews are happening at schools. As you guys were reading through this part of Indicator 4, were there any aha moments that stuck out, or anything that you're like, wow, I just experienced this and this, I was able to implement this strategy? We'd love to hear those success stories as well.
Yeah, and you're talking
You
about the
can,
hiring, yeah, the hiring process, or just that
yeah,
whole, yep.
that the hiring process. You can put it in the chat or come off mute.
I think, I know for me, there's a reason this is 16 steps, everybody. Each one of these steps has caused me a pain or heartache in some way, right? It's just like failure to do that supervision call. Or failure to make sure the right person took the supervision call, because the supervision call should not be a checkoff. And I can't believe that a lot of them have turned into like Google Forms and surveys and stuff like that. It's really concerning that they don't feel like they have the time to just make a phone call. I know it's convenient, right? But make a connection. Anytime that I had to let somebody go, I went back to that supervisory call and said, "Oh, I think that's what they were trying to tell me," or "I need to make sure I ask this question differently next time." But yeah, and also I know for us, like we're like really battling this step number one. We're hiring for a school, and I'm hiring at my school, and both situations I feel like we're just not getting a lot of applicants because we just haven't had the presence on the right maybe social media pages, right? Or because we're a charter school and we can't feed our job through, the regular school systems page or whatever it may be, because where I'm a charter school head, we are authorized by the school district. So that's where people would go to look for jobs. They would need to know that our school existed to even do that. So really making sure that each year you're, putting yourself out there. And even if you don't have openings, get out there. Yeah, it's the same thing for your student enrollment. Even though you may have a giant wait list everywhere, stay out there because you want to stay in the forefront. Because you know who's out there? Your competition's out there all the time because they're constantly looking for people. Because they constantly have openings, so just make sure that you're doing that. That's just something I realized this year that we are not in a good space in terms of recruitment,
Yeah.
and we're the highest performing school in the freaking state. We're having a hard time. It's like this is crazy. It doesn't make any sense to me. How's this possible? But that's it. Folks don't know you outside of your county or your region.
Yeah, I was just gonna say this has, been a big topic of conversation in our inner circles lately, and most of our school leaders here are saying that the best recruitment they have right now is just word of mouth, their own staff members recruiting on their behalf.
Yeah, and I think that's always a good. I know at Piedmont gives a. I think I'm pretty sure they give a cash reward. I know we do too. I think I have to up it now. It's only $100, but man, I need to crank it up. Holly just wrote in the chat about the podcast about the hungry, humble, and smart. Yeah, and that's yeah, $500 at Piedmont. I love it. Hopefully, it's cash, right? Just cash in front of the whole 200 employee staff. Humble, Hungry, and Smart is the book is called The Ideal Team Player. It was written by Pat Lencioni, and it's a really great way to determine who is your avatar. And that's kind of we talk about a little bit, but not as deep as Pat does. But I just really love that theory. Someone's hungry, right? I was always hungry, but I wasn't always humble. I'm still not very humble at times. And then the smart. The smart piece is that how well do they operate in terms of saying the right things in front of people all the time? It's kind of like an integrity kind of conversation. And I just remember there's this one descriptor of a person called a skillful politician. That's the person that's hungry, and they're smart, right? In terms of like their cunning in a way. And they'll say something in front of, all the right people, and then as soon as you turn their back, they're just, whoo, my goodness. But it is important to have some sort of way to measure those soft skills. I mean, we just said, like, you hire people for what they know, you fire them for who they are. So your hiring process needs to have a behavioral-based model to make sure you're taking people through exercises where you're going to get to know who they are. And Emily's not on here with us, but she was with us for, 2 years, and that was like her job, was the anytime we had to hire somebody, and I just say, Emily, just watch them. Just watch what they do when other people aren't looking. And boy, did she see some things, and she'd call me and text me, "You're not going to believe what I just saw." I said, I believe it. That's what people do. And they do it around, which I've seen them do it around, the people that they feel like they have a positional authority over. They haven't even been hired yet. And it's just an easy way. So as much as you can, put your applicants in informal situations, you're going to really find out about them. So I love it. All right, I'm going to score my wheel for indicator four here now. So here's what I'm doing. I have my printout because I did it electronically, or maybe you did it in the book. There's four sub indicators here, right? Employee development, teacher recruitment, expanded professional opportunities, internal, and then having some sort of school climate process, some feedback. In North Carolina, we have the teachers' working conditions every 2 years. Our team does a school climate survey. Maybe you guys have created your own, but it is important to get some sort of consistent baseline feedback back on every single year. We're going to share something, Lauren. You looked like you're going to, are you finding something?
I was typing in the chat.
Okay.
I was just asking if anyone was willing to share any of their one of their ACTs.
Oh yeah. And then what's your action step? Yep. I can't find my scores. Here one, here two. Seven, eight. I know for me, for the Seaside School, it's definitely we've got a board member who's like, she just started a human resource company. I got to get her in there before she rolls off and really give us a look at. And we got to find like job fairs in our area. Maybe we start a job fair. I mean, maybe that's the answer. I don't know. But I know we're going to do our leadership conference in November. So that's just one way to just expose our school to other people. But I gave myself a 2 out of 4 on this one. So let me get my pen. Oh, my wheel. My wheel is like a, it's not a wheel. It's like a, what do those cowboys have on the backs of their boots? What are those things called? A
A
spur?
spur.
Yeah, I'm turning into a spur here. I'll just be able to stab somebody. So look at this. Oh, hey. All right. I got work to do. I got work to do.
A bumpy ride, Tom.
It is. I may have just really high standards. I'm gonna have our whole team retake it because it's been a couple of years since we did it. So all right. Oh, I think we got an extra step here. Let's see. Prepping people for the charter renewal. That's a great leadership capacity, and it's a great way to communicate your mission, your vision, your values, right? It's a really good way and an assessment to look at. Do like people truly understand our mission, vision, and why we exist, and what a charter school is, is and isn't. That's a great way. Who was that? Was that?
It's Jennifer.
It's Jennifer. Piedmont. Ron, I think I told you this, but I got Joel Manby, the guy who wrote Love Works, to sign my author version of Indicator 5, because he does a lot of work on culture. That's a really great book. I would highly recommend it as a study, everybody. It's called Love Works. He also, or you could just watch him on, he was on Undercover Boss, but it's not when he was with SeaWorld, it was when he was with that some like entertainment amusement park company. But then he got hired at SeaWorld when all like the really bad stuff was going on at SeaWorld. And he worked really hard to clean that up. So, all right, we're gonna go to indicator five, and I think we're gonna tackle one of the parts, right, Lauren? We wanted to tackle the 7 steps.
Yeah, sure.
Defining culture, which is great because I learned this process first from Mark Cole, And I got Mark Cole, the president of the John Maxwell team, to sign. He signed my seven steps page. And then he looked at me, and I was like, "Oh God, did he just like call me out for like stealing his work?" I'm not, because I'm like, "Oh, I didn't give him credit. I don't think in here. He didn't care." But I was just like, "Oh, is this a good idea?" But that was, and that's the skinny strategic plan I think we created for this one, right? I think so. Yeah, define it, teach it. Yep. So I'm going to drop it in the chat. I'm going to take a look at these again and make sure they're exactly what we want. But here's another one. But Lauren, you want to get us started with this one, with the culture?
Sure. Yeah, the first thing that I underlined was on page 138, and it's right there in bold. It says everything has culture.
Yep. It
I
really
loved.
does. I was at a minor league baseball game, or not a minor league. I'm here in Jupiter, Florida, and we're where the Miami Marlins and the Cardinals have their training camp. And it was interesting. It's a Cardinals town, but the Miami Marlins play here. And my son and my wife got this really delicious Italian water ice. If you guys have ever had Italian water ice, it's really good. Rita's is as close as we would have, but they're going to go back tomorrow, and they asked her, are like you going to be here and open? She goes, yeah, we'll have two carts open tomorrow because the Cardinals are in town. And I was like, oh, like the she goes, this is really a Cardinal stadium, right? There you go. Like, so because there was like nobody there. There was probably 1,000 people in the game, and I just thought that was interesting. Like everything has a culture, even who's going to show up and watch a game that means nothing.
I mean, it's right here in the book, Tom. It's a set of unwritten rules that people learn as they try to fit into a particular group. So the unwritten rule is two carts
That's right. Two
of
carts when the
water
Cardinals are
ice
playing.
when the Cardinals are in. It's an
That's right.
unwritten rule.
Maybe they'll bring out like their bigger scoopers and stuff too. I don't know, right? Everything may change. Yeah, everything changes. Yeah, good. I love it. Yeah, keep going.
Well, I'm curious to hear if there's any aha moments or reflections from anyone else in the group as you're reading through Indicator 5.
They're probably wondering what a terrible school Tom led. Like, oh my gosh, look at these awful stories that he wrote about the culture of a school, the organization. It really was, though. It was really hard. It was a hard place. It was a great place and a hard place to work at the same time because the culture was like so suffocating at times. It wasn't toxic, but it was definitely not values oriented. It wasn't values oriented about people. And this list that I just like highlighted this list at the bottom of page 143 about, all these things, right? When employees come late, when, teachers choose comfortable lessons, when teachers raise their voices, when employees scroll on their phones. Like I remember Jeff and I were in a faculty meeting one time, and we were in the back row, and we could see everybody's computer. Someone was searching for vacations on it. Like during, he's just like, poking me. He's like, "Look at this, man." I said, "Yeah, all these things. I mean, they all matter. It is the most powerful factor in your organization, and you can see it, and you can definitely feel it. But it's invisible at times. It's invisible." And you just have to, going back, your wheel is not where you want it to be because of your school culture. That's really the answer, because the culture is the average sum of the behaviors of the people. So if you're short in one of your areas, you have to go back and say, okay, what's the cultural problem here, right? What's the cultural problem here? And then the seven steps, you got to see it, right? What do I want it to be? This is where you might need to get off your own campus, get some high performing mentors in your life and ask them. Then you need to define it, what it is that we aim to see and do and be and feel on a daily basis. Then you have to teach it. And this is for everybody in your organization, from the board members to the families, everybody. You got to teach it, model it, practice it, measure it, and celebrate it. And I really love the measuring and the celebrating. You could really come up with some great ideas of how you measurement. It could be from student attendance, right, to tardiness, to referrals. I mean, all these things matter when you're measuring it. And I could guarantee if you could work on the on the supervision ratio and work on this sub indicator right here, you're going to see your school explode in a year. It's going to be at such a great place if you just, because they're kind of hand in hand, right? If I don't have the supervision ratio, I'm going to have pockets of a toxic culture in my school, right? Yep. And the
And I
self,
think that last step is so important. Is that
yeah,
what
I
you're
was gonna
about to
say,
say?
yeah,
Celebrate.
it's so fun. It's so fun. It's so fun to celebrate it and have, you know, something in play. Like I wrote here, you know, just, you know, training programs. It's at, you know, Seaside, we use the Ron Clark Academy. You know, it's kind of their, you know, structure, but in a sense, like it's our core values. It's our piece. I Lead is a free program through the Maxwell Leadership you can get, and that's got core values emphasis. You could use the book Change Your World. It's got a set of core values. We have our core values exercise that we'll make sure is shared out with you as well. I mean, it's so important to take the time to celebrate all these little pieces. And I love following all you on social media. I get daily daily reminders of who you're for. And that's such an important piece of this, is that when you're celebrating kids and when you're celebrating staff, like you could tell right away, and you're celebrating your partnerships, that's just another way to celebrate how the people are emphasizing and demonstrating your core values in outside of the school community is great. And so, I mean, in the book, it's really just kind of spelled out to you, pages 146 to 151. And I think, you know, the one here that I would spend the most time on that I did not realize is the model it piece. I did not know and understand that. Well, two things. You don't produce like what you say, you produce who you are, right? So basically, people are going to watch you, and whatever you do as the leader, they're going to do. And so you can't say one thing and do another. I go back to my high school baseball coaching days, those poor kids. Like I was just such a terrible model for them. I was too friendly. I didn't, you know, demonstrate good values in front of them, or, you know, model strong behavior in front of them, but I certainly gave them consequences when they didn't do it. And now that I look back, you know, it's 20 years later, I wasn't who they needed to be. I was probably not the right person in the position, honestly, right? So it really does start on the inside out. So if you want to really change the culture of your organization, you got to start with you. And I can't remember what book John, you know, does it. And it could be 21 Laws, the Law of Solid Ground, but there's like an assessment, Lauren. And I feel like he asks, how would you rate yourself on all of these character pieces? And if not everyone, one of them's a perfect, he's like, you got to start there because you're reproducing that score around your organization. So if you're a person that lacks integrity, you're going to create a lack of integrity. If you're a person that talks, you know, bad about other people behind your back, that's what you're actually creating in your school. You don't even realize it, right? If they do realize it, that's even a worse problem, right? Because then they don't even care. But we do see that, and I've tried to be better at that, at, you know, calling leaders out, you know, for that, that you can't say those things. I don't care if you think it's a safe space or not. If you think them and you say them out loud, but you haven't said them to the person, that's you are lowering your culture of your school, of your organization. But
Reaping and sowing.
yeah, I love it. Someone put an example in here. Adam did a Super Bowl. We had Friday for a Super Bowl. We had a teacher sample and vote on various soups, which one was their favorite. It's great when incorporated staff and parents donated drinks. Yeah. Yep. Great bonding, right? So and you just, you know, culture is based upon rituals, ceremonies, and stories. So when I think about my school, what are the stories that were told? The stories of turnover. It wasn't right. What, you know, we had our rituals and we had our ceremonies, but those stories, I could not overcome those stories. Those walls could tell tell those stories. So you just want to be really thinking about that. What are the stories that you're hearing in the community and the reputation of the organization? Like, that's what you want. And then you choose, you choose the stories that you want to move forward. I remember when I first moved to Raleigh, North Carolina, there was a high school there called Knightdale High. And I guess like they had a horrible fight one time, but it was all captured on YouTube. And the school's name, became Fightdale. And like the principal said it took him 3 years to get enough Google stories to knock that Fightdale YouTube out because it had so many views. But it does take time and effort to be very intentional about how you want the school communicated to. But most importantly, you have to be the picture. You have to be the change that you want to see in your organization. And that's part of the hard part. And I think our school, Seaside School, we're successful at the middle school at a high level because our leader, Kim Mixon, who's part of the inner circle, like she has empowered teachers. And I watch teachers when they run this house leadership, like they're sweating and running around and they're so excited and they're so energetic. I still got my house, like it's a big thing. It's a big deal when you walk in and you see the scoreboard of kind of how all the houses are, and on House Leadership Day, it makes a big difference. So I would highly really think about this for next year, everybody. Think big, start small. What are some ways that we can build consistent rituals? I put a couple examples in the book, but what are some consistent rituals that you could build into your and it has to be part of your school. This isn't second step. If some of you are old enough to remember, like when I first started teaching at age 15, we all taught second step, but I never understood why. But now I think back, I'm like, oh my gosh, that what a really important program it was to teach kids, right? And character education. But it was never part of our ritual or our ceremony or story. It was just part of what we were told to do. And you need to make sure that your culture building activities are not told to do activities. They have to come from the inside out. All right, so action steps for this one, Lauren. What's a good one? What's a good one do you think for school leaders to take a look at? I'm going to pull up my score here, an indicator 5.
Yeah, I think a great action step is to, after, in the book on page 153, after you do your self-assessment and see where you are, on the indicator, bring this back to your team and have some discussions around, have them rate, answer these questions. Even if they don't have a copy of the book, they can just, next to you next to your scores in a different colored pen. I just think that these sub-indicators are great conversation starters that you guys can be using with your leadership team, and see, which of these sub-indicators do we need to focus on? Is it the training programs? Are we celebrating the successes like we need to?
You know what, too, you just made me think, because I know we got individuals on this call and who are listening to us that are not teachers. There are other administrative roles, and everything has a culture. Your finance department has culture. Your front office has culture. Like, all these external pieces of your school have really important cultural impact. And so if you're an organization, a leader, or if you're one of those individuals, you want to make sure that you're aware of what are the pieces that we're trying, to share. Because I just, it's those care abouts. We're trying to work through that exercise, and maybe some of you are hearing this for the first time. But I asked my staff, what do you care about? And what do you think another, department cares about? I just named all the departments and asked them. And someone wrote on a couple of answers, I don't know. At least they didn't write out and care, right? So that would have been tough. But I don't know. It's like, okay, so I've got work to do because I got multiple campuses and multiple pieces, but I need to make sure everybody's on the same page. But I really like that action step, Lauren, is to start with the people on your team, have them score it, take a look at it, and then say, okay, what are these pieces in place? If you need core values exercise, we've got them. Or you can use some of the stuff that I talk about in the book. Lauren, I got a 4 out of 4 on this one. Getting there. So this was my highest score besides indicator 2 on this.
Awesome.
Yeah, so the wheel's starting to kind of lean back up. And I want to make sure I wrote down one more thing I thought I did here. I would take the time, if you're also creating your calendar next year, your school calendar, because this is the exercise we're doing. We just learned about the law of momentum in our book study with the Seaside School. And I was like, gosh, what great culture building activities, right? What great motivation pieces happen throughout the year? And how can I make sure they're intentionally placed during some of the lulls? And we just came out of a lull. The worst lull of the school year is your first day back from Christmas break to your spring break. It's such a difficult time for everybody in your organization. And so if you can make sure maybe your best one or two ceremonies or rituals that infuse like why your school exists and how people behave, I would do it during that time. So that's what we're going to look at. We're going to shift our like amaze and shake maybe, or just something. Well, hopefully nobody's listening. Well, if they're listening, it doesn't mean it's permanent, everybody. I'm just saying we're just giving an idea. But we want to make sure that we've got something in between January 10th and March, 15th that really creates cohesiveness and why we're all here together, because this can be a tough time for everybody. So
Yeah.
love it. All right. All right. Well, make sure you write down your action steps. We look forward to hearing what your team talked about this week. And next m Monday, what do we? I know I changed the indicators around, but I can't remember if we're doing finance first or we're doing governance first. They may have it. Let me see here. All right,
Oh,
next Monday night at 7, we are doing indicators 7, 8, and 9. So we're going to skip 6 for now. We're going to do that one last. That's the one with parents. And then next week, we're going to do Claire Wilson's expertise. We're going to do some finance. We'll do some operations next Monday night. All right. And then so then we'll do indicators 6 and 10 on April 2nd. So, all right, everybody, thanks for ha hanging in with us. If you are listening on the podcast and if we said something you like, make sure that you subscribe so my son thinks I'm a cool dude and I get more subscriptions. Oh, by the way, my cousin, who's 12, I just saw him yesterday. He's got like 1,000 YouTube followers and he's got things. I said, come on, buddy. I said, how's this even possible? But anyway, so please, everybody, make Lauren and I seem like we're a bigger deal. And so make sure you like the page, share it out. And if you don't have the book, get a copy of the book. It's 10, you can go to 10indicators.com or you can buy it on Amazon right now. And there's a Kindle version as well. And if you have the book and you're liking the book, please go to Amazon and give it a rating and let's do it. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. See you, Lauren.
Bye.